FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. Today is 3/13/17, getting close to the Ides of March. And just like a young man's mind turns to romance and other things with the onset of spring, well, we've got the first signs of inflation coming in with spring as well. Well, inflation, you really need to define inflation, because in the traditional definition, the Keynesian definition, if you will, that's when consumer prices go up. And all you care about is how much you're paying for a loaf of bread, a gallon of milk, a gallon of gas at the gas station. However, the Austrian definition, by the Austrian definition, we've been seeing inflation for years now. It just hasn't translated into higher consumer prices yet, because under the Austrian school of economics definition, an increase in the money supply, and in this case, you would have to say credit because it's debt-based money supply. You know, we have a debt-based money supply. Every dollar that exists is borrowed into existence. So an increase in the money supply is inflation in accordance with the Austrian School of Economics definition. Well, with that out of the way, John Rubino is with us now to further explore the rapidly increasing consumer and producer prices that are happening all over the world. John, good morning.
Good morning, Kerry. Yeah, by the Austrian School of Economics definition, we've been in a raging inflation for the past 5 or 6 years, actually for the past 30 years, but extremely so since the Great Recession began in 2008-2009. In the sense that the governments of the world have been creating huge amounts of new currency and tossing it into the market, and players in the market, including governments, have been borrowing huge amounts of money, in other words, creating huge amounts of new credit. But that hasn't yet, or that hasn't up till now, translated into stuff that people normally think of as inflation. In other words, rising prices in the things you buy day to day. You know, there has been an asset price inflation over the past 5 years, where fine art and trophy properties and equities and bonds have all gone through the roof. That's where the money has gone that the governments have been creating up till now. Well, lately, we're seeing signs that Keynesian inflation, in other words, inflation in the cost of living, is starting to bubble back up. A few headlines from just the last few days. Swiss inflation rises at the highest monthly rate in 5 years. China February production inflation, fastest in nearly 9 years. Year over year, U.S. import prices at highest level in 5 years. I've got a bunch more of these, but it's like that everywhere now, with prices of things that people buy day to day going up at a suddenly dramatic rate. And what has happened is basically the money is finally making it over to the consumer side of the market. You know, when in Economics 101, they teach that there's a variable time lag between changes in monetary policy and the effects on the real economy. This time around, it took longer than usual. The time lag was bigger than usual because we had taken on so much debt leading up to the bursting of the housing bubble that we had this mountain of bad paper out there that is very deflationary and that took a really long time to mostly work off, so that the amount of money that governments are creating day after day after day is finally having an effect on the real economy. Now, what does that mean going forward? It means instability. I mean, history is pretty clear on this, that once inflation starts to rise, the players in the market start acting accordingly. In other words, people start borrowing really aggressively, because that's a logical thing to do. When the value of the currency that you're borrowing is going down, it makes sense to borrow. That pushes up interest rates, and then higher interest rates affect asset prices. You know, you measure the valuation of stocks to an extent versus bonds. So if the interest rate that bonds are yielding now goes up, then stocks get relatively less attractive, and you see volatility in the stock market. At the same time, if interest rates go up, obviously that's bond prices going down. So bondholders take big capital losses in an inflationary environment. So you get everybody being spooked and not knowing what to do. That was the case in the 1970s. And it was the case towards the end of the 1980s, towards the end of the 1990s, certainly in the 2000s. And now we're back in that place again. And that's usually a really unhappy place from the point of view of policymakers, because they feel obligated to raise interest rates to try to slow down the rate of inflation. But they know that's going to cause instability. But they also know that the instability that would result from not acting is even more extreme. So they bite the bullet, raise rates, and then you get your bear markets in equities and bonds, you know? And so we're heading back into that now after a really, really long period of extreme stability, which people have taken again to calling the Great Moderation. That's what they called it in 2005, 2006, when a lot of people who should have known better thought that governments had finally figured out a way to smooth out the business cycle and we didn't have to worry about downturns anymore. Alan Greenspan was one of the, as with so many things, one of the perps in this, you know, one of the really egregious actors by saying things like this and by lulling people into a sense that the government actually was able to control a modern economy, which they clearly aren't. You know, it's way too complex for some guys sitting around a conference table to make any sense of and to manage. Only markets can manage a complex economy like this. And with governments distorting markets by suppressing volatility, you kind of coil the spring. And when volatility comes, it's more extreme than it would have been otherwise. That's what we're looking at now, Kerry.
Yeah. So once the inflation genie is out of the bottle, John, where does it go? What are the limits on it? And can the Fed act and bring interest rates high enough to bring inflation or rising consumer prices, that's what we're really talking about, under control without just collapsing the entire world economy?
Okay, well, glad you added that last little part there, Kerry, because obviously they can raise interest rates high enough to stop inflation in its tracks. Paul Volcker did it in the late 1970s, early 1980s. He raised short-term interest rates to nearly 20%.
Yes, he did.
And you got a nasty recession after that. The problem is that back then we actually were financially pretty solid. We had a pretty decent balance sheet globally, the global financial system. In other words, didn't carry a ton of debt. Well, it's the opposite of the case now. We are the most highly leveraged society that has ever existed in human history. So you don't really have the Volcker solution this time around, because if you try to raise interest rates on, you know, what is global debt now? It's $100 trillion or something like that. It's insanely large number, depending on how you calculate it.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And so if you try to do that, that means you bankrupt pretty much everybody, because all the world's major governments have borrowed short. You know, they owe more money than they've ever owed before, and they've borrowed it in the short-term end of the spectrum mostly, because that's where interest rates are lowest. So they have to roll that over year after year after year. You know, in the U.S., it's several trillion dollars a year has to be rolled over. And if interest rates were to go up dramatically, that means the cost of rolling that debt over goes up commensurately. So it would blow a massive hole in the budget of the U.S. and an even bigger hole in the budget of, for instance, Japan, which has a government that owes, 220% of GDP right now?
Yeah,
so the stat with Japan is if their average borrowing cost goes up to just 2%, which is less than the current U.S. average borrowing cost, their interest costs would exceed their government tax revenue. So they would be a bankrupt country, just flat out financially toast. China's kind of got a similar problem because they borrowed really insane amounts of money for a developing country in the last decade. And nobody even really knows who owes what in China, because they've got a big shadow banking system with all these, you know, local government agencies that have borrowed a lot of money to build airports that nobody flies into and out of, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the ghost cities of China have been financed with money that isn't really very well accounted for, but clearly, you know, exists as debt on somebody's books. Mm-hmm. And if their interest rates spiked, we would find out in a hurry where that debt is. So, and the derivatives markets are really big on interest rate derivatives right now. There's several hundred trillion dollars of bets between banks and hedge funds out there that require one side or the other to pay off if interest rates go up dramatically. So if interest rates spike, you'll see a a wave of bankruptcies in the hedge fund sector that will spread to the major money center banks. And we could have a 2008-2009 thing again, as we did with AIG blowing up because of their credit default swaps and almost taking down JPMorgan Chase and Goldman Sachs. You know, people forget that those big banks, Goldman Sachs only exists because the government bailed out AIG. Otherwise, Goldman Sachs would be this name that lives only in memory, you know, like Merrill Lynch.
For sure. And Bear Stearns and the rest of them, right? I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, it would be like Bear Stearns. It would be a formerly big Wall Street broker that went bust, you know? And and the only reason they exist now is because their guys were in charge of the government. So they made sure that Goldman was one of the beneficiaries of the bailouts. But otherwise, toast. And now we're looking at something much bigger because global debt is so much higher than it was back then. You know, the U.S. government owes twice as much as it did in 2009. And the arc is steepening. You know, we borrowed more money last year than we had in the previous couple of years at the government level.
Yeah.
So it's getting worse and worse. We're more and more highly leveraged. And now we're heading back into a period of interest rate instability because inflation is spiking. This has the potential for a really fascinating few years from a theoretical standpoint. You know, economists of the world are going to be riveted by what's happening. Unfortunately, it's not going to be interesting or fun for anybody else in the world. You know, it's going to be terrifying for the average person to see something like 2008, 2009 come back only on a bigger scale with fewer tools in the hands of government to deal with it, because borrowing more money probably won't help. Raising interest rates won't help. Cutting interest rates won't help. There's not really much left to do if you want to avoid turning a credit crisis into a currency crisis. And I think that's the next thing that they're going to try. And I think it'll fail spectacularly this time around.
No doubt it will. We have to cut this episode a little bit short. Got to conflicting demands on the calendar, but hey, find John's work over at dollarcollapse.com, our work, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Sign up for both free newsletters. We just did a great one again, the Workaholic in Chief Part 2. Any questions, comments on this interview or others, kl@carrielutz.com, kl@carrielutz.com, Twitter feed @CarrieLutz, Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. John, we will catch you next week. This is fascinating. I thought that inflation had been cured. We didn't have to worry about anything anymore because, hey, it's all been fixed. But lo and behold, who could have believed it hadn't been fixed? The business cycle wasn't repealed after all, John.
Hey, Carrie, no, it wasn't. It's going to come back with a vengeance.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.